Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And we're back for one night only. Hey, boys. Hey, it's been a little while.
What did they say? Surprise, bitch.
One night only.
Thought you saw the last of us.
Yes. And introducing our host. He changes hair color more than he changes his underwear. It's Mikey.
I changed my underwear. How dare you? And also, we have the man who has been flight banned before it was even made into law, Lucas.
That's right.
It's so nice to be back in a room and immediately cutting each other down to shreds. I'm happy to introduce our next host, who's fresh off a trip to Puerto Vallarta, where he sank a ship. It's Thomas Jaspers.
Oh, thank you so much. And of course, the man who got to spend lockdown with his favourite person in the world, himself, it's Kyle.
I was like, wait, who? I was like, oh, it's just me. It's just me that's left.
It's nice to be back and recording. And
yeah. So nice. This is so surreal. It's very been so surreal. Long because we were in our rooms for so long recording. Yeah. And when did we finish in August?
We were on hiatus.
Yeah,
thank
hiatus.
Hiatus.
It felt very... sort of professional to say hiatus and it left people going, but I'm so happy.
Instead of just saying we all had breakdowns and
we're we all totally lost our shit.
It got real dark, y'all.
I feel like a lot has happened in the time we were away for our sissies and in the world of the LGBTQIA+.
Yes, it
has. Yeah, 2021 has, it's been a bit of a better start, I would say.
Yeah,
I certainly hope so, and I hope it keeps going this way. I'm not sure if you guys saw that kind of viral video that's been going around of like that gay in a Melbourne nightclub partying to Chromatica.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Song.
I was like, this is amazing. And then we became the envy of the world in the comment sections. I was like, you know what? This is actually so nice to feel like we're actually envied by people when we were like the trash can of Australia for so long. In our COVID, because we had very high numbers here in Melbourne.
Didn't Lady Gaga retweet it?
There was two videos. There was the initial one from Puff Doof, which went viral.
I think the initial one was at Circuit.
Gaga posted the one from Circuit.
Yeah.
I think you get a badge
for
getting retweeted by Lady Gaga.
Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, where does that place you in the gay hierarchy?
How cool is it that we get to finally dance to amazing albums that got released in lockdown, which we haven't had access, like Dua Lipa,
for
Lady
so
Gaga,
long,
like
honestly.
All these people.
Yeah. We're so lucky. Yeah. We're in a major city that has multiple gay bars, but we're also in a country that has managed to keep COVID under control.
Yeah.
But also, we're forgetting, like, at the moment, Sydney still isn't allowed to dance, so Melbourne's the only city,
major city
with multiple
there.
Bars all, that can have
it
people
It sounds
falling.
Like the plot line to, like, Footloose or something. But the city where you can still dance.
Yeah. Well, the first night that we were allowed to start dancing again, I was hosting my new comedy night, Untitled Comedy, at Molly's
What
bar
would this podcast be without a plug from Tom in the first 5 minutes.
3 minutes. Starting early this week.
But it was midnight that night, and they said, at midnight, you can announce that everyone's allowed to get up and start dancing.
Oh my God,
and so I got them, and I was drunk by that point.
That
so I got up and announced it, and it was actually the most beautiful thing. Aww. Everyone just got up and was going absolutely nuts, just dancing at midnight. It was so
That's
cool.
So great.
Felt very footloose, yeah.
Have you guys been hitting the clubs?
Yeah, I was just
I've been, in the last few weeks, we've been going to Rainbow House Club, which has been really nice.
I've heard so many good things about that.
It's honestly so good. It's like what Honcho used to be when they used to have it weekly, which they're only doing it monthly now, which is really sad.
I miss my girl Dawn.
Yeah, Miss Dawn works at the bar. Yeah. Like, Aisha Buffet runs the night. Like, it is all different queer performers now, which is really, really great.
And Ruby Slippers. Ruby Slippers.
Oh, she's so recently. She's so
like, it's just so nice to walk into a queer space again and not be terrified to, like, hug people and, like, dance and have a good time. And, like, it's been really, really lovely.
And I have to say, it's a tribute to the owners and the, the bookers and the managers and stuff of these spaces that they have soldiered on. It was dire for a lot of these venues during lockdown. A lot of them didn't qualify for all of their staff to be on JobKeeper, and so they were trying to run, like, takeaway drinks and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
When we had that initial period of you were allowed to have people in, but they had to be seated, they all transformed what they were doing to have, you know, DT started doing cabaret, and for my comedy night, Molly's, that was a new thing for them, so that they could have sit-down events and that sort of stuff.
They had to adapt.
They adapted and pivoted so quickly and so well, and their staff as well. Like, that was a lot of work for them too. So, you know, kudos to them for all the work that they had to do to stay alive. To survive that lockdown.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about Rainbow is the first time I saw it, because I work near it, and this is very Melbourne centric, so apologies. But we'd gone for after work drinks on Smith Street when it had first opened up, and someone pointed across and said, "Is that a gay bar?" And I was like, "No way, that's like a theme gay restaurant." Like, at first I looked at it and went, "That is something that is like making fun, like that is not serious." Then I think a few weeks later I was like, I'm gonna try the like, it's literally called like Rainbow House Club, like
Rainbow, it's like just like throw some gay words at
and
it.
And I think it's owned by the guys that own the kebab shop next door.
So the guy that owns that shop owns like four of them along that strip, and they had that just as like a random restaurant for so long, and then they've opened this up, and you can get all the kebabs delivered to Rainbow House, which is great.
That is a full service, like that is amazing.
But it's a full like community moment in that they obviously own that property, and that the kebabs are their business, and they kind of said, well, to run this space we need queer people booking it, managing it. That's when Ruby Slippers came in and started booking the Thursday nights back in the day, and with a real focus on trans performers, people of color, and the performers you don't see at like Circuit on a Saturday, because that space didn't really exist, and Honcho was getting more and more sort of set in who they booked. And to see it kind of survive COVID and then flourish, now we're back with you know, really varied nights across the week. I just love that kind of like, it's the kebab shop.
That's so cool.
And like, they've handed the reins over to these really forward-thinking members of our community that say, no, this is what Melbourne wants and needs, and they've just gone for it.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of fearless in a way.
Yeah. It's so exciting that everything is, well, I mean, for us anyway, we're very privileged and very in a good lucky, space at the moment, so I'm very happy for us all, and we all really did put in all the dark times and went, got through it all, so we deserve this.
What's the banner? Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just saying, it's nice. I've been kind of exploring and going to like places I wouldn't normally go. I went to a night recently called Bones on the north side here, which a friend of mine organizes, and it's just like a really fun, so inclusive, like queer space, and like Ruby Slippers performed there, and she was incredible, and there's so many people signing up to lip syncs on the stage, and it was just like such a great vibe. Like, everyone was so supportive, like you couldn't get on there and not have like a good time, and it was such a nice release, and just like of all this like happy energy, and everyone was just happy to see everyone, just be out, great times. Made some great friends there.
I also think it's worth mentioning what a good job all of the queer festivals around Australia are doing. Most of our queer festivals happen in the summer season, so the last thing to happen before COVID started for a lot of people was Midsummer or Mardi Gras or Chill Out Festival or something like that. So to see all of them bouncing back now and adapting what they do so that they can do it, it would be so easy for them to say, you know what, we're taking a year off. Or for Mardi Gras to say, you know what, we'll do the parade, but fuck the rest of it, or the same with Midsummer and that sort of stuff. Hobart has just done one. Chill Out's happening. Christchurch over in New Zealand is doing theirs as well at the moment. It's really cool to see the effort and the work that they're putting in to make sure that they can still present something, even if it's not the usual festival. That
they people are evolving and changing. Yeah, it's really inspiring to see. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's our community is really resilient, I think, is the thing to take from this, and has done such a wonderful job of making sure that we all have spaces and events to gather at.
You can see all your pretty faces there.
Yeah.
And we can still crank it to Chromatica.
Chromatica!
Yes. I wanted to say, what was the bang? Because, you know, we were in our bedrooms for so long, and these albums dropped, and you're like, this is the song I want to lose my shit to.
Yeah.
You know, the club. Yes. And I think...
What's your song?
I think for me, it would be Replay.
Replay is untouchable.
But did you have... Yeah. Tom, I'm looking directly.
Wait, what like 1950s show tune?
Have you heard of these artists?
I was at where was I? Fuck, and Torn by Natalie Imbruglia came on, and I was like, I want to dance to this.
Hell.
No, I like listening to your new bops.
Oh, I miss this. I miss paying you out for being old.
I knew I could go straight.
Yeah,
for this.
Straight for it.
The only time I really ever am up to date with new music is when I'm at clubs. So it's been really exciting for me to come out and hear all these albums that you've probably been listening to for the last 12 months. Jeez. For me, there's just a whole lot of music's been released in the last few weeks.
Yeah. It's like no one's made me a mixtape in a while.
Mine was definitely 3430.
Little Ari.
No, I was loving it. It was really
your
good.
Your little R&B sis.
All about it. In other great news that's happening for our community is blood donation wait times has gone down, which is really, really exciting. So it was at 12 months for gay men and trans people who also sleep with men forever. What was it?
Since 2000. Yeah. So in the 80s, they put a complete blanket ban on us donating blood at all. And then in 2000, it was that you had to have had no...
It was abstaining from sex oral.
12 months. But to me, at the end of the day, we are more susceptible to contracting HIV. That is just a thing that we know is a fact. Yes, the rhetoric around it and the wording that's been used has been pretty disgusting over time, and that needs to be addressed. I know a lot of gay men are doing it from a place of goodwill, wanting to donate blood genuinely from their heart. But as a lot of HIV activists will talk about, the way that a lot of people talk about it is as if like... the people that want to donate blood are saying, I'm not one of those bad gays that got HIV, as if it's something that you've done wrong if you have contracted HIV. And whilst, great, fantastic that we're at a place now where we can go down to 3 months, and I know a lot of people are arguing that there shouldn't be a ban at all, and if science proves that's something that can potentially happen, fantastic. I think the better conversation to be pushing for would be just ending new HIV transmissions in Australia. Absolutely. So that it's not a concern. But it's a really mixed bag the way that people talk about it, because you've then got a whole lot of people celebrating because they're able to donate blood. But the way that can be perceived by someone who may be HIV positive is people celebrating the fact that they're being seen as separate to people who are HIV, as if
I didn't think of it like in that way. But I think I read in the UK they've implemented an individual risk assessment, which I think is maybe a bit better with gay and bi men. So they're scrapping the 3 month
general
period
ban,
and just having an individual, which I think makes sense.
Absolutely. That could be
so. Maybe if we could do something like that.
For sure.
Yeah. All I know is I've got about 6 tons worth of blood in my fridge right now, and it's
stocking
about.
Up? Is it your own?
Nothing to do with it.
And what color is it? Like green?
Just been trying to figure out where to put it. I think the conversations around blood donations have been relatively outdated, and well overdue for a review and a discourse. And the othering that occurs within our community is something that is very real and requires a lot of...
And happens a lot in this area of
conversation. And they're the biggest voices within this discussion, and getting their insight into how we discuss it and what we should be sort of reviewing and pushing for means we can be more sensitive about it. But... so much of it, whenever we talk about legislation, you're like, this sounds like 1950s talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and absolutely. It's so weird.
It's always a positive to be updating our approaches to this. And I realize it's not easy or fast to do. So I'm glad this has had some movement on it. But
and you are right with the individual risk assessment things. It's definitely something that we potentially should be looking at. We are seeing actually a rise in new cases of HIV in the heterosexual community.
Yes.
There is theories that is related to a rise in popularity in anal sex within the heterosexual community.
Yeah.
Because the basic facts are that, you know, the anus tears easier than a vagina does. So it's easier to transmit it that way.
Yeah.
So the theory is that that's why it's rising in the heterosexual community. And if that is the case, then perhaps there does need to be individual risk assessments for absolutely everybody. But yeah, I think Luke put it perfectly. The othering that the gay community does when they're talking about blood donations and HIV is yucky.
Yeah. It's a yucky comment. Like, I've seen the comment threads and they're so like not taking full consideration into the scope
and what you're saying when you're saying I don't need to be judged that way. Other gays might, but I don't need to be judged that way.
I'm also not a science gay, so I don't like
that's for damn sure.
I collect blood for like entertainment purposes.
Recreational purposes.
Recreationally. So I am not the like go-to source, and that's why I don't really put my head into these discussions. But I'll support anyone that I see being othered.
I really
that always resonates with me and makes me go, okay, there's another way of looking at this issue that maybe isn't the status quo. So let's see where that conversation goes.
You're like Mother Teresa.
I know that, I
she collected
that
blood
time.
As well, I think.
Oh god, she was I must have missed that
little brown gay boy. We also had another win this year, just in February. Now this is Victorian issue where our upper house and our parliament passed a law banning gay conversion practices with some pretty hefty fines. And obviously people have been pushing up against this and wanting this for much, much longer than that as well. So it feels like a long overdue movement.
Yeah. As Kyle was just saying, one of those news headlines you hear of that you think, oh, isn't that from the 1950s? But
yeah, absolutely. And even one of our podcast friends of the pod, Harriet Shing.
We love Harriet.
Who was here talking about wombats once, I believe.
Dogs, yeah. Oh, yeah. Harriet loves her puppy. Yeah. We miss Harriet.
Was there as an openly gay member of parliament to speak.
First lesbian,
Yeah, not to underplay. To speak on the matter and celebrate with other members of our community. Mm-hmm. And I know a few people who have gone through conversion practice in their childhood or their early teens, and the effects and the scars of it are monumental. And I could only imagine how this would feel like a monumental, monumental.
Such a huge thing.
And the government's not fucking around with it either.
No,
I think it was $200,000 and jail time. And jail time plus $100,000 if there was any physical damage done.
Yes.
Because there are some disgusting physical practices that can be involved with conversion practices.
I'm really
well.
Happy, that they're just fully coming down. Like huge fines, jail time, fuck him.
And I love that it was like majority vote as well. Like it was 27 to 9. Like it was a bipartisan vote. Like it was pretty much everyone across the bench was like, we can't do this.
Yeah.
This
it's so let's nice. Track down those nine.
We love
but
this. We love these people. Let's get it done. Yeah. I love this for us.
We love this. We stand.
It is good. And it's one of the constant battles I think we face within our community, which is this sort of straw man argument that our existence threatens religious freedom. By just existing, we are a threat to everyday society or people's right to believe in a certain religion. And it's used against us politically quite often. The like very few voices that were in dissent against this pushed that angle that this was infringing on a religious right because it was a belief. But it's honestly just a way to get people angry and feel like us naughty gays are taking something from you. We're storming into your house and we're not going to let you pray or something.
And I think Harriet mentioned that in her speech. Was it Harriet that was talking about that?
No, I think it was the other speech.
But basically they were talking about the fact that you can actually still be a homophobe. There is still freedom of speech and freedom of religion. If your religion wants you to dislike gays, you are still allowed to do that. What this is doing is stopping you from trying to convert an individual, convert their gender orientation or sexuality.
It was MP Sonia Terpstra that said that.
And articulated it much better than I can.
And it's kind of sad that that is the reality of it. Yeah. That the bill is actually saying you can just be a bigot at home.
What you do in the privacy of your own home is one thing.
You can still do it on the street. You can't electrocute them every time you have gay thoughts.
But I think legislation like this is a move towards changing people's way of thinking, more importantly. So people are still going to be homophobic. It's the reality of the current world. Mm-hmm. But as governments actually make certain practices illegal, they're setting a kind of standard to say, well, you can think that way, but these things that align with that way of thinking are actually now illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't change the way people think or make thoughts illegal or feelings illegal. Mm-hmm. But if we make all the actions around it and the disgusting things that people do out of hate.
Sorts.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a big win. A big congratulations to those that were there. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. some of the tweets I saw looked like it was quite a big celebration for the LGBT community that were there on the day.
And it was one
huge.
It was one of Dan Andrews' promises when he came into power to ban this, which I'm very thankful for following through. Good on you, Dan. Yeah. Love you lots. Take care of us all. Yeah.
Speaking of politics, one of the other huge things that has happened that I'm surprised we haven't talked about is that Donald Trump isn't president.
That's quite big news.
Yeah. I know, there's so much has actually happened since we stopped this podcast.
Like, the day that was all happening, I was at home and I was just like on the TV, like, oh my God.
I've never followed something so much in my whole life. Yeah. I was just glued. Like, I would wake up and then pray and then open my phone and look at the results. I'm like, please. And then it just went for like a week. That was so stressful.
Were we on hiatus when he got COVID? Remember?
Yes.
So much.
I was like, The Simpsons. Please predict right.
Yeah. Yes. Wouldn't it? Oh yeah. I mean, it sounds. I don't wish anyone dead.
No, I wish him dead.
But I don't think of him as a human.
I wish he'd fall down an up escalator and just fall forever.
When he got it, this disease that he sort of had pretended didn't exist, and then miraculously recovered from it so quickly. Whether or not he actually had it, whether or not he actually did recover that quickly, who knows? All of those sorts of things. I mean, I think that we, as a global society, have been through so much unexpected stuff that we thought could not possibly happen, including things like Trump getting the presidency in the first place.
Oh my God.
I mean, no one thought that was going to happen. No. Scott Morrison winning prime minister here. COVID becoming as big as it was. Like, there's so much stuff that has happened. I mean, neo-Nazis coming back in so many countries. So much stuff has happened that we got to that election, that Donald Trump election, we were like, I don't know.
I was like, we need this win. We just need this win, and I can start believing in humanity again.
Yeah,
we
but get I didn't feel win. Confident.
No, yeah, I wasn't not confident, at not at all.
So for that to happen, I was like, oh, maybe there is some goodness in the world. Like, sort of like Mary Poppins was
It was
Joe Biden was some sort of Mary Poppins.
Very that.
Yeah. So that was amazing to watch. And just watching Trump's team just crumble into,
it was a sinking ship, baby.
It was a sinking ship. And there was melting hair, and there was the Four Seasons, and it was just glorious.
Oh, the melting. Oh, like, yeah, that's right. Oh, that was disgusting.
That was so
in the
funny.
Four Seasons car park.
Yeah.
The landscaping. My God.
So, you know, Biden got elected, and there was people saying, well, is he just sort of like a watered down, you know, he's still a rich old white dude, which, you know, he is.
Yeah.
But
a lot better.
There's still a difference, I think, and I wouldn't want to put him in the same basket as a lot of rich old white dude politicians. And I think one of the things that we can look at as sort of a hopeful sign for the future of his presidency is him overturning the trans military ban.
Nice.
So for just a bit of background, in the 1960s, I think it was 1960 actually, they introduced a trans military ban in the US, and of course that was adopted by a lot of countries that do whatever the US does.
Yeah.
And then Obama overturned it in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then Trump came in, and one of his promises was that, and he followed through with it, was that he would essentially reintroduce it. They didn't technically kick people out of the military that were trans, but they had to identify and serve as their born gender. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if you're going to live your life, then you had to leave the military. So Biden, on his first day, promised that they would overturn that within 5 days of being president, had overturned it, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And he's encouraging anyone that fills the required needs to be someone that serves in the military to roll and join up.
Such a relief. It's so nice to just have, like, I mean, I'm not saying he's perfect or anything, but it's so nice to just have, like,
a boring non-person
in government again, just like, just rolling back some of this evil. Just do your job. Just be a politician, but, like, not like an insanely evil, crazy person.
I was actually surprised to hear there's actually 9,000 people who identify as trans in the US armed services. So that was a lot of people that was affecting since Trump introduced that ban. A lot of people that were, I mean, not that it should matter whether there's 1 or 9,000, but that's a lot of people who were going, well, I've trained and dedicated my life to this service, and now I'm looking at either serving as the gender that I don't identify with, that I've spent a lot of my life, you know, stepping away from.
God, that'd be traumatic.
Yeah, wouldn't that be so traumatic? So now, there was the executive order that Biden issued, but it's now they're trying to write it into, I think it was the 1960 something act or rather.
So
that it won't be able to be overruled if someone like Trump was to be to come back in, and it'll be ingrained. Please God, no. The same that race is ingrained into the right.
How many goats do I have to sacrifice for him to not come back?
Have you ever felt the urge to serve your country? You know, it's not something I'm particularly felt a need for, but I know from watching a lot of episodes of Intervention that some people that really crave a certain sort of structure in their life, that the military provides that and provides a lot of really positive things to people who may have had a lot of chaos in their life. Mm-hmm. Especially earlier on in their developmental years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, the patriotism of wanting to serve your country is a strong feeling for a lot of us. But have you ever felt that?
I've had fleeting moments, I think, when I just...
Really?
Honestly. Yeah. Like, and then during this lockdown time, because I haven't worked for a year until recently, I've just gotten a job. But looking at so many job applications and seeing like a whole kind of career path kind of planned out for you, it has been somewhat appealing to me. And then I was like, no. But like, it's been like just moments, but I don't feel particularly patriotic about like going to war and stuff, but it's just I don't know.
I going to an all boys Catholic school, which
it's in your DNA.
You did. No, someone else did.
I was raised
you
by
did
wolves.
Religious school though, didn't you, Mikey?
I went to a school that taught religion, but it was a public school.
So all boys, let me tell you about all boys Catholics. What they love doing on like what's it called, like Occupation Day or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They might have a dentist come in and talk about being a dentist, but they will have like every faction of the military there to try and recruit. Because all boys Catholic schools are run very similarly to old school military institutions. So they would come quite often to school and talk about the benefits of joining the Navy or the Air Force or whatever. And it's never, I don't think it was ever from a place of patriotism or something like that. They do talk, in those sessions, they do talk a lot about the good work that some armed forces units are sent out to do in areas that need assistance and that sort of stuff. So I think that was probably attractive, but it was more about, they talk a lot about like the courses that they'll pay for you to do and that
the
sort
future
of stuff. Yeah, and also just like, I'm from a big suburban Catholic family as well, so I have cousins and stuff that had served in the military and gotten qualifications from that and that sort of thing. Some of them it went well for, some of them it did not end up going well for. But the other one I've thought about in the past is the police force.
Yeah.
And I think it comes from, again, having family members, extended family members that are in the police force who are good people, and seeing in the media and news that there are really awful people in the police force, and thinking, oh, maybe what it needs is more good people with
more
good
diversity,
intentions to join.
Yeah,
and so especially since the Victoria Police has started their LGBTI outreach programs to try and recruit more LGBTI people. That has crossed my mind in the past as well.
Yeah.
Mm. But there's a whole lot of fitness stuff you have to do.
Yeah. You're not prepared for
it. I don't want to get muddy.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting. I could fully see if you were a young LGBTQIA plus youth who's maybe been kicked out of home, your life is in total disarray.
You could really give you that structure.
A total structure and a pathway for your future and your career whilst you did something beneficial for people in need.
Mm-hmm.
Is a very attractive sort of option.
Yeah.
It's not for me, but I think being excluded from being able to take up that offer because of your sexuality or your gender is extremely outdated, like so many of these little wins we've had.
My understanding is that in a lot of countries, including Australia and the US, is also that they do often offer a position for people who might have had to leave home early. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So that probably, makes sense for a lot of LGBTI people.
This is not a paid Promotion.
We're not recruiting. Join the
military. Head over to
sail the seven seas.
Sissies in the Navy.
You say you're coming. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why that number is higher than I expected it to be. That 9,000 number is that you get food and accommodation and learn skills and that sort of thing that you might not be able to afford to do if you weren't supported in at home.
Like my dad served in the Navy for 15 years.
Oh,
like we didn't speak to him the whole time that he was there, but like it's always left like a sour taste in my mouth, like serving in the army or the military or navy
there are
or whatever.
So many semen jokes
floating around
right now.
Not only like for personal reasons because dad left, but when he came back, it was
and what
a
era
whole different story. So like he left in, it would have been like early 2000s. And he was back like 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. So he had served like overseas, like dealing with like war criminals and pirates and stuff. And when he came back, like I remember who he was before and he's a completely different person now. Like he has quite severe PTSD.
Yeah.
Like just is a shell of a human.
So that's only, that's only 5 years ago that he left.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, right. Because my understanding was that the onboarding and offboarding process was a lot better now than it had been in the past.
He got back 5 years ago. He would have got back. And that's when we met again. And like for me, like seeing the devastation that happened to him makes me never ever want to go anywhere near that. And that's just for personal reasons at the end of the day, like because he's not a person anymore, which really really sucks.
Yeah,
but he has such fond memories of like his early days of it, and he was just like it really gave me purpose, which was really good to hear. And I was just like, that's cool, like I'm glad that that gave you what you needed.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, well, something that didn't dry up during COVID.
Oh, never.
Was RuPaul's Drag Race continued to somehow churn out, I think, four different entries during a global pandemic. So sticking to that resilience.
The devil works hard, but RuPaul works harder.
Works harder. Right now, at this point in time recording, we currently watching season 13 of US season. Tom's eyes are glazing over.
No, I'm not.
Excuse me.
Tom's back into it.
I'm back.
And we also have Drag Race UK. So we're getting double seasons. We've got All Stars coming up. But the news that is very exciting, I think, for us locally is the long, you know, whispered about, rumored, and finally confirmed that
it's been
Drag Race
so long time
Down
coming.
Under has completed filming. So noticeably, compared to a lot of the rumors, it is not Drag Race Australia. It's
down
very vaguely
under.
Down under. So we have a few little things to unpack and chat about. I'd like to start with Drag Race Down Under.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Because I think it's really exciting.
So exciting.
For a lot of us who are members of the Melbourne drag community or very closely affiliated to it. And what's most exciting to me, even though the formula of the shows is very like, we get it, we've seen it, is this feeling that something we've enjoyed and we've been a part of and that has really enriched our lives over the last however many years is finally going to get sort of this international platform, like one of the largest LGBT television shows in the world is going to be showcasing people that we know and
so
people
exciting.
That we admire and respect. And
yeah.
It's and also a little scary.
Yeah.
And just a side note to that, I think and I might be biased here, but I think Australia has one of the most original and amazing drag scenes, and has actually incredibly rich history of drag going right back to, you know, people putting on shows in fucking convict camps and stuff like that. It's a we have a very unique drag culture that is partially influenced by a lot of the countries geographically around us, partially influenced by the old school pantomime dames of the United Kingdom, and partially influenced by the New York drag ball scene and that sort of stuff. So I think we have this amazing melting really pot that's been going for quite a while here. And I'm really excited for the rest of the world to see that more than just something like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I get what you're saying when you say it's a bit scary. I feel anxiety that the rest of the world isn't going to kind of get our kind of sense of humor and stuff here in Australia. And like, it might not hit like the same as it would.
I love that.
Oh, really? I'm worried it's going to like be edited so strange and it's like nothing's going
to
hit.
No, because I love the Americans watching the UK season going, oh, for once we're the ones that have to Google something. You know, like I'm excited for the rest of the world to go, oh, what does look at Mui mean?
But I think the fear comes from like how devastatingly harsh the fan base is.
They really truly are.
Drag Race has, I think, one of the I don't know if you're allowed to say this word anymore, but one of the most feral
online disgusting
fan bases I've ever encountered. And I've spent a lot of time on Reddit because that's who I am. Mm. And some of the stuff I've seen directed towards queens from all of the seasons, UK, Thailand, and America, and Canada, and Holland.
God, there's so many
there's
now.
There's been some very like awful stuff. Yeah. And I think some of the anxious feeling is like...
We want to protect.
Absolutely. Drag Race is not always the best platform for giving a multi-layered kind of deep, all-encompassing viewpoint of a queen. They're often sort of cast with a certain plot line in mind. You're a villain, you're a comedy queen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that don't always give the best justice to an individual.
Yeah.
And it's usually up to us as viewers to really go and see that performer live and follow them. And I think the fear is some of the performers that we enjoy and know and support may not get
the best edit or
view.
Totally. And it's also that, you know, there might be queens that we've been going to see at the 86 on a Thursday night for the last 10 years who we know are incredible and we just love seeing them live. But the idea of them having to pack all their drag up into a suitcase, fly to New Zealand, sit in quarantine for 2 weeks and then put that on a stage at a studio in New Zealand in front of people they don't know, that they might not be able to present the same way that they do here. Right. That scares the shit out of us.
And we just want the best for all our friends and queens.
I think it'll be amazing,
I hope so, because I think that the UK one's doing so well. In my opinion, I'm so much more into it because it feels like really fresh, like fun talent and a different view.
But also, and I think like Australia is so much more aligned with the UK than what we are with the US. Yeah. Like, and I think it'll translate really well.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like the UK ones, they seem like more of a sisterhood. Like they seem like to really uplift each other and be really nice to each other. Whereas I find in the American ones, they seem very like egotistical and like very about like, it's all about me. Blah, blah, blah.
You know why I think that is though? Yeah. I think in the US, they're fighting for money.
That's true. Absolutely. That's so true. Money. Yeah.
And like from what I understand, it's 20 grand for the... I don't know that fact for certain. Yeah. And I'm sure possibly by the time this podcast airs, if they announce what the prize will be when they announce the queens. So sorry, just to be really clear to people that are listening, we're recording this on Saturday, the 6th of March in Melbourne, which is in Sydney.
At 2:16 p.m.
In Sydney, is Mardi Gras Parade night. And very excitingly, the queens are going to be announced at Mardi Gras Parade. Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff that we're theorizing, you will know whether or not we are correct about.
Let us know how we did.
So whether or not they release the prize tonight, I don't know. I had heard it's $20,000. But again, the UK version was not a huge prize.
No.
And in a way, I kind of liked it. That meant they were using costumes made out of cardboard and hot glue guns.
Yeah. Because the BBC's running it. They don't have a budget. It's just like, you just make it work.
And it's being run by Stan, which is Australia's sort of little Netflix-y kind of thing. Yeah.
And I feel like the US one's a little bit scraping the barrel with Queens now because it's like, and then with the UK, it's like the fresh talent that they've had around for. So we're seeing the best.
Yeah. And that's what we need to remember when we look at the cut. So everyone's expecting the cream of Australian crop to be in the lineup. But I think Rue has learned, mm-hmm. you don't put the entire number one you spread it out, from every state.
Like Vegemite. Yeah.
Yes, Australia. Because you'll run out. Yes. So we're going to see a big range of queens. And there might be some people missing from it that you think should be in it. And that's probably because they're thinking of saving them for the second season or whatever. Mm-hmm,
for sure.
Very exciting, I think, that Reese Nicholson's been announced the guest judge.
That's great. Yeah. Why not?
Reese Nicholson has faced some pretty awful stuff from the wider community because he speaks with lisp, he is camp, he is foppy, he looks like a 1940s poet. He is an incredibly brave and funny person, and he knows the community. Like he will be at, you'll go and see him at drag shows. But no, I think it's absolutely incredible that someone is camp and fabulous as Reese.
Really good. Like I've seen him perform, and I've heard him on other comedy like podcasts in Australia, and he's been very like high quality and very funny.
He's also talking about the toxic culture of Drag Race when they announced that Reese was going to be the host.
Yeah.
A lot of older white gay men apparently don't have access to Google because they felt the need to comment who underneath the poster. Okay, if you don't know him, then just fucking type his name in and you'll see his comedy galas or his Netflix special or something like that pop up.
What?
So let's like, I think it'll be exciting that this is coming out after the lineup will be announced. So first of all, very exciting. I've been hired by one of the queens to write some material for them. So I'm not going to say that queen's name as one of my suggestions. But there's other people that we've heard rumors about and stuff that I might mention. Who do you guys think is going to be in there?
One of the biggest rumors I've heard it out in the community would definitely be Miss Karen from Finance.
Karen from Finance. I feel like that's a
I feel like, that's she's for a shoo-in. Absolutely. Like, you can't have a first season without her.
And she's had such big... Win the Rue Girls,
and she's done
travel around Australia and do their shows. She's always been.
She
a big
hosts
part
them
of
all.
That.
Yeah,
she hosts them all. She has to. It would be criminal.
Yeah, I think that we knew that she was going to be on the lineup before they announced that there was an Australian version coming.
I think
everyone was like,
"Yo, we might have had words when we interviewed her." How long ago did we have her on the show?
There's been, there's been rumors happening about for years.
Who else?
Miss Art Simone.
Yeah.
Art
Simone.
Yeah, surely. Definitely. Surely. Don't call me Shirley.
Flawless.
Surely.
Oh, God, Kyle.
You missed this, Luke.
Coco Jumbo from Sydney is a very strong contender. And I may have seen her performing the other day, and she may have alluded to it on stage
Without
while I was in Sydney last week. Yeah. Without saying it, she may have made some very strong allusions.
I'm going on a show called Schmoopole's Schmag Schmags.
You might want to keep an eye out for her and Maxie Shield, she was performing with in Sydney, and both of them made some jokes about how they may or may not perform in the singing challenge.
That's interesting.
Did you guys see the tea from Willem on their podcast Race Chaser?
What were they saying?
Willem apparently has heard from the editing or the production team at World of Wonder that Snatch Game Down Under is one of the most catastrophic.
I've heard this, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's so sad. But then also at the same time, I feel every time Snatch Game comes around, I'm expecting it to be the best thing ever. And it's always the cringiest thing ever. There'll be one person who's funny and the rest is so good.
Yeah.
For me, the worse, the better. Like reality TV.
Like winner.
I'm just excited to know who they're impersonating.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's so disappointing because there's so many good Australian characters.
I'm so upset that Tase would rob us of Kath and Kim. Like, I was like, how dare you stick to a UK person? Yeah. Like, leave that for us.
She did a good job. I think for the UK community and like the world
community.
I think just for everybody outside of Australia, that would have been a good impression. But for us here, I was like, come on, girl.
There was not a further
look at Mooi. What are you doing?
Look at Mooi. The thing I'm so excited for is hopefully like all the guest judges for Australia. Like, we've got some.
I don't think so. It'll be
From what I've heard.
Unless they're on an iPad.
They can't. They had to
do what they did with, like, you know, at least do what they did with like Anne Hathaway on the American one.
Yeah,
like,
they possibly
them in, zoom them.
What I've heard is that they'll have a few Kiwi guest judges.
Yeah.
But they're not doing like zoom ins from Australia.
I really hope that someone does an impersonation of Gina Liano.
I was just gonna say
that's
like
iconic. That's what I want.
I think everyone's too scared to do it in case Carl Manal ever goes on.
Oh.
But I'm hoping for a Jacinda Ardern. I think that would be such
Jacinda
a good
Ardern, that would be, and she would love
And if
it.
Someone did Jacinda and someone did Australian Prime Minister. Fuck.
ScoMo. What, ScoMo?
Julia. No, Julia Gillard. Miss Julia. I want to see Julia Gillard and Jacinda Ardern.
Miss Aussie speech. Yeah.
I'd like to see Lily Chin.
Lily Chin.
A very good gesture.
Oh my God.
So there's apparently a very convincing visually and physically Bindi Irwin, but that the execution is not...
Fun to see tea about a season so close home. Have you guys seen... Also, like, my way of sort of confirming a few of these queens have been who has had, like, very public apologies for, like, questionable behavior in the past few weeks.
I've not seen any of those.
There's been a few of those. That,
just general apologies.
Well, very specific. Oh, like, this is the other scary thing about being on a global platform is
everything's
people
put
will,
under a
they're going to hunt for stuff.
Dig like, things up on you that... and maybe not your proudest moments and that you've grown from as a person.
Yeah.
And they may be a part of your history, but... Yeah.
No, you, I think you're probably alluding to Karen from Finance's thing.
I saw that and Scarlett.
Oh, I didn't see Scarlett's. Karen's whole scandal... I'm not even going to call it a scandal.
No,
Karen's learning process was actually several years ago, and she has publicly and on social media apologized for it. And as you'll see, whenever someone tweets about it or comments about it, she will talk about how she is committed to continuing to apologize for it, because she realizes that that's something that you have to continue doing, not just once off.
Yeah.
But it's just that as more people discovered that it happened in the past, they haven't heard that apology yet. So the recent public post that she did isn't the first time she's done that publicly.
Okay.
But not to say that it's justifiable or anything like that, but as she herself said, you know, that was a learning process that she went through a few years ago. Totally. And I think it's refreshing. And it's similar to, we've talked about Magda Zabanski doing blackface in the old sketch comedy shows in the 90s. Mm. She's of a similar mind where, because some people are only discovering now that that's something she'd done in the past, she is happy to continue to apologize for it. And I think that's really
That's the right attitude to have.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's also up to people of color to accept the apology.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
Not, you know, like a few... So there's, at least to my knowledge, been two very recent ones of public apologies. And I know they're for historical things that have been addressed in the past, but they're getting... sort of signal boosted on a much larger scale because they are part of the rumor mill for this new production. And I think an important thing to keep in mind is that when people in the public eye do make these public statements, especially when they're in relation to racially insensitive things, that the apologies and the statements are for people of color to accept and decide whether they forgiven and not a kind of perfunctory piece of meat kind of exchange. Yeah. And Karen's definitely did feel like that. And it definitely did seem like, hey, this is not the first time that tattoo has come up. Scarlett, I don't know. I've just seen the photos from a performance that were quite questionable. And she said, I've also acknowledged and apologized for this previously. But it's true where you say, like, if it's a learning journey, but if you have made those mistakes, that there is a level where it's going to follow you around, I think. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right. I'm not saying that I'm accepting her apology, because the apology is not to me. I'm saying it's refreshing to see people coming. We so often see people that have done something wrong in the past saying, oh, well, I've apologized for that, so I don't need to talk about it again. I like seeing that someone's keeping that conversation open.
Yeah.
And also, as someone that grew up in a similar socioeconomic area to Karen, in a similar age, and we're both, you know, basically we're both white dudes in our mid-30s that grew up in suburb, like, you know, Bogan suburbia. Yeah. We grew up with Gollywog dolls on the shelves at the chemist. You were as likely to find a Gollywog doll in a toy bin as you would a Barbie doll. That doesn't justify the fact that someone might have put that out there and made other people feel uncomfortable, but it is an inevitable thing that it was part of Australian culture. I get disappointed when I see people from my similar backgrounds justifying that continuously. And I guess what I'm saying is I'm excited to see someone else that, like me, grew up thinking that that was okay, having that conversation and saying, and not just going with that blind, well, it's not my fault because I didn't know.
Saying,
you know, this, here's why I thought that it was okay, but I now realize that it absolutely wasn't.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what I like when people make apologies about previous misunderstandings about racial insensitivity? Is often, especially if you're making a public statement, these phrases you hear a lot is, I'm not that person anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I learned and I'm not that person anymore. And I actually think, even though that sounds like a really correct thing to say, it sits so wrong with me.
Okay.
Because I don't think it necessarily, I think cognitively what it kind of does is says, that bad thing, that other person did it, and they're over there, and I'm like this person now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what I respect a lot more is when people say, I did that, I was that person, I'm still that person, I just know more now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand everything, and I grew from there to here.
Mm-hmm.
And not this kind of distancing of like, you see it quite often, right, where people say, oh, I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'm not that person.
I'm not responsible for
that. And so therefore I'm somehow not responsible for the actions of this. But but really, we've all made mistakes.
Yeah.
And we're all learning.
And it's actually more exciting, I think, to say I am still that person, but I've learned why I don't have those feelings anymore. Yeah.
I'm still that person. I just know better now.
Yeah.
And so I won't make mistakes like that in the future. And I'll be a dedicated better
to
ally.
Teaching other people not to make that mistake as well. Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't mean to derail it into a racial thing.
Great.
But it's also one of the anxieties about queens we know and getting lifted up to a next level where people will start trolling. And I think, but an important thing is like, even if you're not a huge fan of Drag Race or RuPaul, I think these individual franchises, if we can support them, it means we can have a season two and a season three and a season four.
Yeah.
And we can start lifting up more and more of our community and our performers. There are those, I'm not like other gays. Gays that are like, I don't watch Drag Race. It's not for me, whatever.
Rolls my eyes.
Kind
of hate it. But even if there were elements of this particular subset of the franchise I didn't enjoy or that I wasn't like fully a huge fan of, I'm still going to support this version of the franchise because
I think that's why I've come back a bit on board that and the Gottmik casting because a lot of the issues that I had with the show and why I stopped watching it a long time ago was A, that I felt like they were really not scraping the bottom of the barrel but not giving the queens the time to shine on the show. They were just churning it out so quickly and it just felt like it was a carbon copy every season. But then also I just could not look past Rue's apparent opinions on trans people being involved in the drag world.
Yeah.
But the casting of Gottmik, I think, was really exciting. And I think that you will have noticed that Michelle has been talking a lot more about trans people being included in the drag scene.
Much more.
And I sort of feel like that might be, whether or not it's the right way to go about it, Rue's way of dropping seeds that we're going to be seeing more and more of this being included in in the upcoming seasons, which I hope is the case.
I hope Gottmik wins.
If you don't support this, it's just going to die out as a platform for our queens. Whereas if we support it and push it and keep pushing the boundaries and pushing up against what we want to see on it, what is out there in the community, it'll become a bigger and bigger platform for the type of drag we want to see on it.
It's exciting that like us as queer people can have such a huge platform.
Are you guys feeling a little bit like it was a missed opportunity that production didn't happen here in Sydney?
Yeah.
As originally.
I mean,
from what I understand, it wasn't going to be happening for a long time. It's actually COVID that made it happen at the time it's happening. Because they were like, well, that's
in New Zealand.
Australia and New Zealand are the only two countries that we can really film at the moment. And it was looking happening that's in Sydney, but ended up going to New Zealand because they were a lot more proactive about it.
It's a
shame it's not happening in New Zealand. Oh, sorry, it's not happening in Australia. I'm kind of excited that it is happening in New Zealand, though. I don't know if we would have had inclusion from
queens further forward.
And I don't know if we would have had inclusion from New Zealand queens if it was based here purely.
I think it would have been still a down under, but it would have been majority Australian.
It would only have been Australian,
Also, I hope that, because isn't RuPaul married to an Australian?
Yes.
I hope that actually helps him like really represent Australia and like get
Ruth's pop culture knowledge of Australian stuff is actually amazing.
I'm hoping that that really helps.
Because
Ruth
spent a lot of time here because his husband is Australian. Like they own property up in Queensland and stuff. And, like,
anywhere you see fracking, that's where Rue's been.
There's gold in them hills.
Anywhere the light touches.
Do you think they'll stick with that model for season two and three?
I think it depends if COVID's still around.
Yeah.
If nothing COVID's certain these days.
No. If COVID's going to be so much easier to film in Sydney because you can then pull in Courtney Act or, you know, so many, I mean, Magda Szymanski or whoever you want to pull in from the queer Australian thing easier than flying them to New Zealand.
It's cool that Australia and New Zealand have become such huge places for like filming, and I feel like we're becoming this like super
Marvel's movie for 5 years.
Marvel Studios is moving to Sydney for 5 years to film all their future Marvel movies.
Thank God Sydney built that studio about 40 years ago that never got used for anything aside from Bay Pig in the city.
It's kind of cool to know that we're like the hotspot everyone wants to be here because we're
the safest. Because we're playing Chromatica in the clubs.
Chromatica in the clubs.
Now, I hate to talk about two television things in the same episode, but since we've all been locked in our house for 12 months watching television, there's definitely something that I want to talk about, and it's the TV show It's a Sin, which I believe we've all watched.
Yes.
Yeah. It's on Stan.
I literally finished the last episode this morning.
Oh, how are you even standing?
Do my eyes look puffy? Yeah. Like, because, wow.
Just in case you've been living under a rock, It's a Sin is a British TV show set in the 80s, loosely based on real stories about, you know, a young group of friends living through the AIDS epidemic in London as it unfolded. It's pretty honest. It's pretty raw. And from and none of us can speak from experience, but from the people that we've talked to, even on this podcast, and I'm thinking of Miss Candy and Deborah McDougall and people like that we've had on, some of our elders, it sounds like it's pretty true to how it unfolded. Mm-hmm. We think of it now. I was like, oh my gosh, it must have just one day been a thing. Yeah. But the way that it unfolds in the TV show as something that people didn't really know whether it was happening. And then when they did know, they were like, well, it's not going to affect us. They sort of spoke about it. It's interesting because we hear about it from an Australian perspective where it was very much an overseas thing until it was here. In the UK, it was very much an American thing until it was in the UK. And then London became one of the epicenters. And I guess as it was written by someone that sort of lived through it as well, it's been very well received as the way that it was written and performed and acted. What are our thoughts?
Wow.
Like, I knew it was bad, but actually watching it all unfold and like a lot of the misinformation that a lot of people were getting, especially like going through the pandemic that we're going through at the moment.
I feel like there's so many parallels with it.
So many parallels. But I really didn't understand the gravity of how devastating it was. It was hard to watch.
It was really hard to watch, but also beautiful as well, because we also saw those stories of camaraderie and you know, the Jill character coming through and sort of being there for everyone. These are stories that you do hear. Every now and then you'll find a little gem in a you know, a Facebook group of, you know, Lost Gay Melbourne or Lost Gay Sydney or something like that, where you see people that lived through that telling these stories of women or just people in general being there for other people, and, you know, social groups, you know, chosen family sticking together. Chosen family is a term that we use a lot now, but it definitely was probably a thing more than it is now, because people were so easily cast out of their families, whether or not they were HIV positive, but often because at the time HIV was such a stigma that families would cast you out because you had been diagnosed with it.
Yeah. I was purposely trying to not watch it because so many people were saying this show is really great, but it's like so emotional. I'm like, you know what? I choose to be happy. I don't want to watch this because everyone's saying like how emotional they got. And then when I found out we were going to be chatting about it today, I crammed it in the last...
We made you do it.
I had to like cram it in the last 3 days, and I'm so fucking happy I did because it was so eye-opening. Like, obviously you hear about AIDS and the crisis in the 80s, and we've spoken about certain aspects of it on this podcast a few times. But to see it portrayed in that way, it was just felt very real, and I did get very emotional, even though I thought I knew everything which was coming. One of the the biggest parts of the show that I really loved was that sense of community that they had for their family that they had chosen and found, and in their like home, and like they were just all there for each other.
The pink palace.
It was so beautiful. La. Yeah, la. La. I know. I was gonna say we should start the topic by all going la.
I'm gonna be a bit different from usual. Say I didn't hate this.
Yeah. Wow. Who is this?
I know. It's a bit weird, but
I think I know why you didn't hate it though.
I don't like initially Stan was trying to raw dog me with this scene.
Just shove it
the
in.
The moment Stan clocked me before I even signed up. They're like, you're a sissy, here's all this gay stuff. And so I was seeing my suggested and I was playing my usual shtick of being like, I am really sick and tired of gay tragedy stories. We have watched quite a few stories in particular that don't end well for a gay cast. And we have had stories about the epidemic as well, but they're mainly in America. So I did put it off, but COVID does funny things to you when
it does.
You end up watching stuff.
You raise a really good point, though. So often these stories that we get told, queer cinema or queer television is so depressing and it's so flat. Or it's the opposite and it pretends that we don't have the problems that we have at all. Like it's Glee and it's like, oh, everything's fine and we don't need to worry about the stuff that we actually have to worry about. What I loved about this show, it was really honest in that these people were having a great time.
Yeah, they were.
That's part of the tragedy is that, you know, our rights were being advanced. People were talking about a lot of the problems that hadn't been talked about before. It was a really great time to be a queer person, and then this happened.
Yeah.
But they still managed to find moments of happiness and a community, even though that was happening, which I think is one of the truest tellings that I've ever seen in pop culture of that period of time.
Yeah. I agree. I felt like you could really get that sense that everyone fully thought they were invincible and just so arrogant and so cocky and just sleeping with everyone, just having the best times.
Yeah. As they should be. Absolutely.
And what a fucking time to be alive.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like you just hear people talking about it in the background and it starts creeping in. Yeah. People talking about it like this weird unknown cancer.
It felt like
and
a horror picture.
It's so creepy and weird because it's literally kind of what we've been going through now with COVID, like when it first started and you were hurt and everyone was playing it off.
Everyone was
and
like, oh, it'll never come. Yeah, it's
and it's kind of like...
Yeah. But even within the community, that scene where the guy's at the bar trying to hand out flyers to educate people about what HIV is, and they're like, fuck off, we're trying to have fun. Like, that's an American thing, don't worry about it. And then obviously that guy became part of their circle and his partner ended up dying. It's
spoilers.
Well, obviously we're talking about this. Deal with it. We're talking about it.
Yeah. One of the side products, I don't know if it was the intention of the writers and producers when they created it, but I find the way that heterosexual people grow up, society changes slightly every 30 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. The way that we grow up, society changes every fucking 5 years. Like as someone in their mid-30s compared to someone that's 30, compared to someone that's 25, compared to someone that's 20, we have grown up in different worlds completely. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I lived the life that these people lived. I was a child when this was happening, but I do still have memories of the Grim Reaper ads and that sort of stuff and that gay sex equals death kind of thing. My memories compared to someone that's 18 years old now coming out and joining the scene is completely different. Or my knowledge, at least, or my fears of HIV and that sort of stuff are completely different to someone growing up now. And it has always made me, or the last several years, it's made me scared and sad that there is a huge disconnect between our queer, especially gay male elders and the youth coming through, and they sort of see that as being ancient history. They see the AIDS epidemic as being ancient history. One of the amazing things I think that this show does is it uses music that we know, like songs in there that we're like, oh, this is a banger. Like you'll hear this out at a club. I think a lot of young people listening to this and judging by the social media posts and chatting to Twinkie friends, they hear those songs and they go, fuck, that's not ancient history. That's not black and white Titanic days. That's recent.
It's so funny because
it puts it into context. Yeah. It makes you go, shit, they're wearing the clothes that that are sort of cool now. Like, it makes it a lot more real and tangible and touchable for younger queer people. Absolutely. And I think that's a really great side effect that's happened.
Well, that's a realization I had when I decided, I am going to watch this one and not go in with a mindset of hating it because I've seen this story before and I'm sick of gay tragedies and queer tragedies in media. Yeah. Because what I realized from the response from this TV show is I think I've often had an idealistic view of our culture in that you come out and you sort of absorb the pantheon of existing stories that are out there. You go see Angels in America and you go watch Paris is Burning and you just absorb it all. But that just simply isn't the case.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes I think what I've realized from this is in some level, we do need to keep retelling the same stories because it makes it more accessible and attractive to younger viewers and people that necessarily won't seek out a picture from the 80s, for example, because they're not interested in watching something that isn't streamable, you know. And a show like this is accessible and is appealing to a younger generation in a way that perhaps Angels in America isn't, or like that some of those stories we saw when we were coming out are. And that was like an interesting thing to view it through the lens of, is like we've interviewed people that lived through this epidemic, and we know some of these stories, but there's a whole set of eyes watching this because it's on Stan and on their feed that wouldn't have access to that or particularly been interested to go down that path.
And it's told in like such a young, beautiful way that people can relate to. I mean, it hasn't it even sparked like way more people getting like HIV tested now since the show?
And that's another thing that I'm impressed with. I mean, and we'll talk about the fact that a lot of the cast, any queer people in the show that were cast were actually queer in real life as well.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But they've all joined campaigns, and when you see them being interviewed, they aren't just talking about themselves or the show. No. They're also saying, so, you know, don't forget that this is over. They're all putting their voice towards let's end new transmissions of HIV, let's all go out and get tested and know our status and that sort of stuff. It's really, I think the cast are educated on the topic as well, which is a really beautiful thing to see.
And I think the cast is one of the biggest reasons why this show is so successful is because it is through a gay and queer lens. Mm-hmm. Like, they're actual people in our community that are expressing these stories, and like, you can tell that like they feel it. Mm. Like, they're actually feeling what they're acting out.
Yeah, and
like,
absolutely. They're all different kind of parts of the gay community as well. Yeah. And like, I felt like everyone could kind of relate to a character. Mm. And like, the part that devastated me was like, I'm the Colin of like the gays revolting. Like, I was like, they're like the little Scottish guy, whatever. Yeah. And I was like, Welsh. And he was
God.
He was so beautiful and sweet. And that would totally took me by surprise because I fully expected the main guy, Richie, to die going in. Yeah. But Colin, like when he's having seizures to see like AIDS affect someone in such a way to see them lose their mind. I didn't know that was a whole thing. Yeah. Like that was so surprising and it was traumatic.
And his thing, like, mother, I mean, those
that part when he said to his mom, stood I'm with not their kids dirty.
During that time when they didn't. Oh my God.
It didn't matter if you slept with 1,000 men or one man.
Yeah. Like, and it literally was one. And he was so good and played his life so safe and it just
but even that's you, even problematic saying like he was so good and played his life don't be sorry that's the way we're taught to think about it now, but it's not that just wasn't a thing then gay men, whatever you could catch, you could have a pill or an injection or whatever. There was no there's no guilt to contracting HIV then as there is now. And so for some of those people whose parents were okay with it, I mean, that was fucking brave of them. Yeah. Now we expect it and we should expect it. They should stick with their kids. But at the time when they didn't know what it was or how it was being caught or anything like that, like people like Colin's mum, what an angel.
And beautiful song. Yeah, the way that they got treated by the hospital workers and healthcare workers. And like that question of that part when he's like, have you had sex with animals or something?
Yeah.
That was so
and when they locked, when he had jarring. To, he was locked up in the fucking and they just hospital. Wouldn't even
have to have no rights. Horrendous. And it was very hard to watch.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the scenes that really, really like hit hard, I think it was in the final episode when Richie finally passes away and Jill and his mom had that interaction at the end where his mom was just like, it's all your fault, like and she was like, well, no, actually,
it's your
like
fault.
It's your fault. Yeah. Like, you're the reason why that he was such so ashamed scene. Of himself. Yes. And you're the reason why he went and like slept with a million people to fuck away the shame. Like, that's what he was trying to do, and all those deaths are on
you. And that feeling that you deserve it because you are gay came from that shame that people were taught to feel. Yeah.
I feel like we've all definitely felt that, like, we are deserving.
And that's something when we did our interview with Deb, she talked about her best friend not getting, he never actually got tested because he just was like, I don't need to be told. I know I know that I'm wrong. And I think that's sort of a similar feeling to what Richie had. He never stuck around to get those results. It was sort of like, I know I must have it because I deserve it. And that's just how it works. Yeah. Casting, I think it was really incredible that they went for queer people. I think it was really amazing that they did find a HIV-positive actor, Nathaniel Hall, to play Richie's boyfriend.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Who's a wonderful HIV activist as well, and also an incredible performer. Yeah. Has a book out that's really well-reviewed. I've ordered it, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
And also Jill's, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Jill's mum in the show is the real Jill that the story is based on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you know how mum and dad go protesting.
Oh,
wanted
it. Oh, you wanted a twist. That's so amazing.
I think that's really beautiful as well.
Yeah, because yeah. she's one of Russell T. Davis's friends yeah. from back in the day.
Yeah,
she was an actress. Like, yeah.
I want to know amazing. What that musical was that she was in. It almost felt like it was late.
Of course, the part you were focused on. Like, I really need to see. Like, no, this I'm watching some it. I haven't
it's
seen.
Almost Les Mis, yeah. which would be time appropriate. I think Les Mis came out in 85
or 86. I don't remember
that
song.
But, well, no, they. But I'm surprised if it was Les Mis, I'm sure they could have gotten the rights to it. So yeah. it must have been something yeah. similar that came out at the same time because there was yeah. a lot
like
of those operetta musicals yeah. that came out at the time. I need to find that out. Yeah. If anyone knows, please contact us at Gays Revolting.
Oh my god.
Look, yeah. fuck. I mean, what can you say about it? It's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's written honestly. It's cast honestly. Yeah. It's acted honestly. Every time they have an opportunity to sell themselves, they're honestly yeah. using that to promote the cause of what yeah. the show's mm-hmm. about. It's something that's really true and yeah. beautiful.
And the cast, yeah. like the main cast, is so racially diverse, mm-hmm. which I really, really appreciated because mm-hmm. when I first saw it, I was just like, please don't just be all white people.
Yes. Yes.
It didn't just affect white people, it no. affected mm-hmm. everybody. Yeah. And
it
they
was,
did
it was
really
nice to see
well.
The cultural backgrounds, like with the Nigerian family.
Yeah.
Yes. And
well, I feel like they didn't go enough. That was my
oh,
main
oh, really?
Disappointment.
Yeah.
Okay. Is I felt as the season went on, yeah. and it's a short season.
That's the thing, because there was supposed to be eight episodes. Supposed to be eight, but they got cut down to five because the BBC didn't like a bunch of the content that was being presented, so they had to cut it down, which is very disappointing. Mm.
I think initially their representation was really strong in yeah. that first episode and gave a lot of screen time to the two POC actors. Mm. But what I felt is the five episodes ran on, I kind of felt like the POC characters got pushed sort of yeah. into these subplots as Richie's sort
like
of journey
Stephen Fry thing.
Yeah, became yeah. the focus
the
of the
focus,
show.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the season, I kept sort of looking out for the POC characters.
Yeah.
I know one of them got a subplot with Stephen Fry for some reason, Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
And the other one didn't outside of...
That Margaret Thatcher scene was fucking amazing.
That was hilarious.
When he pissed in the jug, that was amazing.
But I craved a bit more of the yeah. screen time, the other characters and the yeah. care they were getting and showing how it impacted their lives. Like if you asked me yeah. how it impacted the boyfriend's life, the I wouldn't be
he probably
able
got
to
the
tell
least kind
you.
Of story, the guy with the long hair. He got like
Nathaniel.
Yes. Yeah.
No, Nathaniel was yeah. Richie's other boyfriend, the actor boyfriend.
Oh, the actor boyfriend.
Right, right.
I think like he got more of a yeah.
But I do love that also. What's the girl's name, the best friend?
Jill.
I'm glad yeah. that like, yeah, because all these people, like the female friends and stuff, they always yeah. get lost kind of yeah. in the mix.
Absolutely.
And it was nice to kind of have a and spotlight they... on these strong female characters yeah. in these gay people's lives. Mm. And yeah, that scene at the end is the one that absolutely yeah. broke me when she's in the hospital and she sits yeah. next to that stranger and just holds his hand. It's like, is there for him.
Those are the stories that are so often forgotten, isn't yeah. it? The yeah. women that were sticking by the men that yeah. were... And look, it's not just women, but a yeah. lot of the time those stories that are forgotten. And there's a lot of women living in our society now that lost all of their friends yeah. then and that don't have that connection to the community that they would have had their friends have lived through the epidemic. So... wonderful that they're seeing their stories finally told, because that's you're right, that's a story yeah. that has not been told
yeah. and I can't yeah. imagine not having a Jill in my life.
Every honestly. We all have Jills in our lives yeah. and honestly. I think that's what's so beautiful, because everyone can relate so much to that, and like we all have yeah. our person. Yeah, it's great.
Well, we're just about to end, and I know I've already got one plug in, but I'm just going to get one more plug in.
Story of your life, Tom.
Comedy of course plug, the pandemic yeah. hit the week before Comedy Festival was supposed to start yes. last year. Yes. So my Comedy Festival show that I plugged so many times last year never actually happened.
Oh, that worked then.
So just try, if you're just recently listening
it's
to episodes.
It's cute that you think we'd actually written it a week before it started, but yeah. Anyway, so I'm just going to get one more plug in here. As some of you may know, I perform at a night called Granny Bingo in Melbourne. And we're doing a comedy festival show at Comedy Republic called An Intimate Evening with Granny Bingo. It's myself and Carmen Al as old ladies telling stories for an hour. It's going to be hilarious. And you can grab tickets at comedyrepublic.com.au. It opens on the 24th of March and runs for 2 weeks. It's a very respectable time of 6:10 p.m.
Oh,
the best time for comedy.
all that. I appreciate that. I'd also like to plug if anyone would like to join the military service. My code, Luke's door list.
And please tweet RuPaul to get Marky on season two of the Australian season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
First skateboarding queen.
So nice to this chat with you so all. Nice. It's been so nice to be back so in the
strange,
studio.
But good.
Yeah. For our listeners, we're not going to commit to doing this at a regular interval, but we are going to keep doing it. We just don't know how. We're just going to do it when we think there's something
it
worth talking about.
Like the shitty boyfriend.
Because it's our show, not your show.
I think we slogged our guts out doing it every week for a long time, and that was great. But we're now going to do it when we feel that there's enough stuff to talk about and when we have the time to do it. So the most important thing you can do if you don't want to miss out on any of the episodes is subscribe, subscribe.
Subscribe.
You can also rate and review, but
who
subscribe.
Who knows when you'll release an episode? We don't.
Yeah, we don't. So you'll get a little notification whenever we release an episode. So if you don't want to miss out, do that. Yeah.
And keep doing juicy stuff out in the world.
Yeah, so we can talk about it.
So we can talk about it. Yeah. You know, be agents. What is that? Be agents of change.
No. Agents of change.
Agents of change. But the more we do out in the world, the more we have to discuss report on in our extremely legitimate journalistic fashion that we do here. The gays are revolting.
If you're in a country that that has a government that hasn't handled this well, I hope you're okay. I hope it hasn't been too painful hearing us talk about going to clubs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And we can't fucking wait until all of your clubs open, and I'm sure that you go back to a much better country than we are. I can't imagine what it's like to still be in lockdown.
No.
Sending our love to you and hoping that you'll be able to come visit us and we can visit you soon.
It's so nice. It's been such a release to finally.
It really has. And I think it's just so nice to see everyone's energy because everyone's just so happy to be there and just be with each other.
Well, Glenn and I have finally started fucking without face masks.
Oh,
it's
nice. Beautiful.
It's been like 8 months.
I'm surprised he's still with you if you can see your face.
We went home. I took him home to, we went to Adelaide.
Oh, yeah.
It was intense.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird to talk about this at the end of the show. Yeah. But we drove back because I think something that happened to me over COVID and lockdown, when I lost my mum, I realized, like, maybe I need to start juggling this, like, Melbourne gay family that I have here with my actual biological family. And so Christmas was kind of a go at, like, how can I incorporate these two sides of myself by bringing Glenn with me? It was like, it wasn't the best attempt as things go. It turns out I'm quite annoying.
What? We have about 200 hours worth of podcasts that I could have played for you that would have proven that.
But life has changed, and I think that's one difference I think that has actually come out of COVID is we're starting to value that the relationships we have can be gone
absolutely
in a very short amount of time, and where we put our energy and our love
actually into. I think that's actually a topic we definitely need to make on when we do our next episode is like changes in values and stuff like
that. I thought you meant my Christmas trip home.
No.
It's like, oh, I'm ready.
On that.
No, I feel like a lot of us have really changed our values and where we want to spend our time and who we want to spend our time with. But
I think everyone in the world has really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been interesting. But it's nice to still be able to connect with the community through this show.
And it's nice to see that we're all still with our partners and everything's going really
still
well.
Healthy and feeling good, which is nice. Yeah.
Duncan and I just looked at a place before recording today because we're moving in together finally. After 3 years, tomorrow's our anniversary.
I can't believe it made exciting. 3 years. We were talking we were talking such shit about you guys.
Don't point at me.
Oh my god.
I mean, I was, but I didn't really know him.
Episode one, you
when we first
dating.
Started recording, it was like the first week of me dating him, basically. So.
You know how people have like Christmas babies? You had a gays are revolting relationship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the whole time.
So lovely to see you all. And hopefully we'll be talking to you and coming in your ears pretty soon.
Coming in your ears.
Filling your ears up.
That's my new phrase for the podcast. Like coming in your ears. This is the Gays Revolting. Coming in your ears. Bye.
And that's
bye.
All.
Bye. Bye.
La.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.